You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Jay Horowitz, another edition of Amazing Mets Conversations with former Met David Cone. David, let me test your memory. It's a plane ride back in August of 92. Was I the one who told you you were traded to Toronto? Because I remember getting into trouble for that. Do you remember anything about that at all?
I do remember, yes. We were coming home from San Diego, I believe. We were on a West Coast trip, and on the flight back, actually, Frank Cashman kind of gave me a little bit of a heads up as to, you know, something might be up, to be by your phone, you know, the next morning. And obviously it was, you know, not much sleep when you're coming on a, you know, on the red eye back to the East Coast. But yes, it was you. And then you kind of keyed me in. Yeah, I appreciate that. I thought that was a classy move because nobody expected that. It was past the trade deadline.
Yeah, it was the end of
August. That was, you know, teams and entire rosters got through waivers that particular year in 1992. And I cleared waivers after the trade deadline. So nobody saw that coming.
And I remember I got yelled at too, David, just so you know.
Yes. No, I appreciate it. That's the kind of class guy you are, Jay. I mean, you care. You care about the players.
We remember that. Mm-hmm. You know, since you retired in 03, you become a conglomerate, really. You work for ESPN, Carl Ravitch and Ronald Perez and Buster, your own podcast, Towing the Slab. And you're reading a book with my friend Jack Curry. Did you, full count, did you see this coming, David, after you left the game? All this stuff coming?
Not really. No, I didn't. Yeah, I think the problem is you still think like a player. I know there's probably still some current players who will be probably good prospects for post-career broadcasting, and they don't think about it all that much because they're so wrapped up in as a player in that mentality. You're kind of in a bubble as a player. So I didn't really see it coming, although I thought maybe at some point it might be there for me if needed. But I think some players need to take a step back from the grind and get out of the traveling life for a little bit before they can jump back in. And some players are ready to jump right in right away. But I wasn't one of those guys. I needed some time away from the game to kind of figure things out.
Yeah, I think Tuesday is you'll be with ESPN. Wednesday is a standalone game with ESPN. Is it hard balancing the two things, David? You have to learn more, read more, know more stats. You know, you do have a national audience.
Absolutely. I mean, the work is much more extensive. I have to know all the teams now, for the most part. Certainly, at least a dozen or 15 teams that we're going to cover on ESPN that I need to know about. So it's much easier, you know, for Keith, Ronnie, and Gary, you know, you cover the Mets and whoever the Mets are playing, right? It's the same with the Yankees on the YES Network. You know, you cover the Yankees, which you know like the back of your hand because you're around those guys all the time, and then whoever they're playing that night. So, and the broadcast, I think, can be slanted towards the home team in a regional coverage, so to speak. So, yeah, it is. It's like a light switch, Jay. I got to sort of be very super objective, or at least sometimes I go overboard to try to be even more objective, especially if it's the Yankees or the Mets, or if I'm covering the Mets, I'm a former Met. If I'm covering the Yankees, I'm a former Yankee. And then the opposing team's going to assume that I'm going to have inherent bias. So yeah, I really worry about that and try to work on that.
You know, I look at 17 years in the majors. You know, I found you pitched 7 years for the Mets, 6 for the Yankees. I didn't, you know, I thought it was, you know, more Yankees, but it's 7, you know, for the Mets. And, what a great career you had with us, David. 30 games over 500. You're the only Met and Yankee pitcher to win 20 for us, 20 for them. You maintained a relationship through the years with Ronnie and Keith, former teammates. Do you ever talk announcing with them, or you talk shop, or is it just baseball and friendship?
No, we do. Absolutely. I mean, they're my mentors, you know, and I can't, you know this, Jay. I'm from Kansas City. I'd never been to New York when I was traded to the Mets, and they taught me how to love New York, how to move into the city and embrace it. And they learned from Rusty Staub. So I'll always be thankful for those early. I learned how to fall in love with New York playing for the Mets. And you're right. It was the majority of my career was spent with the Mets, really, out of any other team. And the best years, I think, too. I was young. I threw harder. I had, you know, a much better fastball, much better stuff as a Met. I had to become more crafty as a Yankee. So, yes, when we talk broadcasting, I think with with Gary, whenever I see Gary, I have such respect. I think Gary Cohen is just remarkable as a play-by-play guy. I mean, he's just there's nothing he doesn't know about the Mets history. He's just a wealth of knowledge, and I think they're the best. I really do. I think they're the benchmark. Gary, Keith, and Ron are what I try to be. I want to be kind of like them. I feel like they probably have a little more freedom. It seems like they feel like they're well established and they can say or go anywhere they want to go. And most regional broadcasts kind of feel like you know which side your bread's buttered on. You might be restricted a little bit, or areas you might not go to or touch that might be controversial to the organization.
David, growing up in Kansas City, did you have any announcers you like to listen to, any old-time guys?
Yeah, it was the radio side for me. You know, I had a transistor radio, but you know, underneath my pillow at night, I was listening to Denny Matthews and Fred White. The Royals, I was a huge Royals fan. So to me, there was just those voices are in embedded into my mind as a child, listening to those games. Those were good Royals teams back in the 70s, too. If you think about George Brett and Hal McRae and Dan Quisenberry, and Dennis Leonard was a great right-handed starter that I tried to copy. And so, yeah, they were in the playoffs every year, too, losing to the Yankees, by the way.
Can I pay you a compliment? I'll be taking the compliment. A lot of people think you were a 1986 Met, but you weren't. The 86 Met should have adopted you, because you really are an 86 Met. I hope you take it to you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You were part of the guy. It didn't take you long to adopt to be part of the gang. So before I did his podcast, I called Franco. I said, why didn't we call David George? And he said, was for George Brett your batting stance? Is that correct or not correct?
Yeah, that was part of it. I mean, when I first got traded to the Mets, my first batting practice round was over in spring training at the old Hug and Stiegel complex. And I was leaning back on my back leg, Charlie Lau style. Charlie Lau was a great hitting coach for the Royals back then. And there was a big lean back in George Brett style. So I just copied it to a T. And then you know how those Mets players were, they were baiting me and testing me all along. And I was kept talking about George Brett, this George Brett, that, and what kind of a guy was George Brett. And the whole time they were setting me up,
to kind of
bait me into, oh, okay, you think you're George Brett. Okay, now we're going to call you George. So it was a sarcastic nickname that all those guys, all those Mets put on me, because I tried to hit like George Brett and talked about him way too much when I was traded to the Mets.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
One thing I want to thank you for, you know, one of the guys who were traded for was Ed Hearn. We just got a new kid. He was very supportive of Ed, and Ed knows that. And, you know, you mentioned it on the air a couple of times. So this is his fourth kid, and he said he was struggling, but he's doing well now. And I just wanted to thank you for
Yeah, that's a great that's a great story. So glad to hear. I mean, you talk about a guy who's had some tough breaks along the way, including right after the trade. He had some shoulder issues with the Royals initially, and you know, he was a good player and a good catcher, and he had some bad breaks along the way.
Can I bring up two things? He's a PR guy, right? That's my training. When you were with us, the 70 years you were with us, you never ran away from anything, not one thing. So April 30th, 1990, Atlanta. Greg Jeffries throws you a ball. You thought the guy was out. You kind of vapor locked a little bit, and two runs scored. But after the game, you were right there.
Yeah, that was still one of the most humiliating days of my career. It's still one of the top five all-time bloopers. You still see it played here and there. It's still referenced on the anniversary date. It's not an anniversary that I'm proud of, obviously. I learned that from you, Jay. I mean, I don't think you got enough credit for the type of PR director you were and the influence you continue to have in the game. But you taught me that this is the way you go about it. You have to be accountable. You will get the benefit of the doubt. And I remember you telling me this. You will get the benefit of the doubt if you respect the deadlines, if you respect the job, understand the job the beat writers have. If you just give it to them quickly and they can beat their deadlines, the timing of doing their jobs means a lot to them, then you will get the benefit of the doubt on down the road. And they will kind of not go easy on you, but I'll, you know, tell both sides of the story or whatnot. And, you know, that was something I learned from you, you know, first and foremost.
You're always there. Made my job. The other thing I wanted to, the playoffs in 88, I don't want to mention this last thing, but wrote an article, Dodgers used for bulletin board material. You lost the second game, but came back and, you know, pitching an inning to get the third victory, pitched a shutout in game six. What was that like for you, David, that whole thing?
That was just a nightmare. You know, it clearly impacted my game in game two. I knew what was going on before the game, before I walked out on that mound to start game two of the LCS in 1988. I knew what was happening. I was just stunned by by what had happened, the circumstances around that article. You know, there's two questions. No, I did not write that article. Bob Clappish wrote it. Did I say those things? Yes, I did say those things. So I had to own up to it after the game. I didn't get a chance to see the final copy before it went to print, but I got the byline. So I got the byline. It was only my picture on the article. It was as if I sat behind the typewriter and wrote those words. I did not, but I did say those things about Jay Hal and Oral Hershiser. So I had to own up to it, and I did. And, you know, that was, I think, a turning point for me early in my career.
It's another, you never ran, you stood up and, you know, and it stood up for everything. One of the things that caused me, I had a language in 1991, we're playing a game, you're pitching, and look at it in the mound, who's 17 pitching? We had him, 17's gone. And I didn't realize, Charlie Samuels was our equipment manager then, you had wanted to wear 17 as tribute to Keith.
Yeah, exactly. That was after Keith obviously left the Mets and signed with Cleveland at the end of his career. Had some back issues, and you know, his best final years were as a Met. So, you know, he was that big of an influence, I think, on me, on that clubhouse. He was so supportive. He was like a pitching coach at first base on the mound, especially as a young player. I really feel so fortunate to have had Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez as, you know, my first real taste of the big leagues. Trying to establish myself, I had those guys guiding me, and that's to me, as the further removed I get from those days, the more I appreciate their influence. And that was one way to be able to show it, was just as a tribute, not to take his number forever, but just to wear it for a few games or, you know, half a year there or whatever it was, just as a tribute to Keith.
David, how disappointed you were for 88 when the Mets win 100 games, beat the Dodgers 10 of 11 games, and we lose in 7 games. I mean, that's the year you're 20-3. It was a disappointing end to a great year.
It still burns. To this day, it still burns because people talk about a lot of different variables in that series. Could have done this, could have done that. The Socia home run off of Dwight Gooden, my newspaper article that you referenced back after game two, our dominance of the Dodgers throughout the regular season that year. I think we only lost one game. I keep getting back to one factor there, and it's Oral Hershiser. Oral Hershiser broke Don Drysdale's record. He threw 6 straight shutouts at the end of that year. He threw 8 innings of shutout ball against us in game one, and we came back and beat him. We thought, boy, that was it. We beat Hershiser in game one. We got this. Obviously, game two was my disaster for a lot of different reasons. We came back, won game three, lost game four. Then the Gibson, Sid Fernandez game in game five. I mean, I still do. You think I remember those games? I remember them like they're yesterday, and it burns me because that was a great Mets team, and that probably derailed a potential dynasty there. That was on the heels of the 86. If we could have come through in 88, who knows where that takes us? I saw it with the Yankees in 90. We won in 96, lost in 97, came back and won in 98. That set up that little mini dynasty that the Yankees had in the late 90s. The Mets had that potential too. If not for 1988.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
David, in addition to your announcer, you become really, with Cybermetrics, did you train yourself with all the stats and the analytics? I mean, I know the announcer is one thing, but now you really, you know, I listen to what I can into all the other analytics stuff. Was that something you purposely got yourself into?
Yeah, you know, I actually, my agent, Steve Fear, used it in arbitration against the Mets in the early 90s. What they were very rudimentary sabermetrics back then. We didn't have the information back then that they have now, but it was kind of along those lines of peeling back the layers of stats that are out there to try to get a more complete picture on what you did. Give credit where credit is due, and the more numbers you have, the better chance you have to kind of ascertain, you know, value and who's really doing what. So, and another thing, Jay, is I wanted to learn the analytics side of things, the sabermetric side of things, so that I could understand it and push back on it at times. And I really feel like you can't criticize something unless you kind of understand it a little bit, unless you try to at least educate yourself. And nothing bothers me more when I hear an old time ball player that I respect say, "Oh, the analytics, you know, umbrella, like it's all under one umbrella. Analytics is ruining the game." And my answer always is, okay, which part? You know, the part that measures my spin rate, that helps my slider, which is the biomechanics part, which part? That mathematical formula that says that we shouldn't bunt? Okay, let's talk about these individually instead of this analytics, you know, is ruining the game kind of a theory.
Hey, there are two games I wanted to talk about. Game 4 of the 2000 World Series. You came in and got one out. Did you pitch to Mike? I forget who you pitched. You pitched third of an inning. How different was that for you, you know, at Shea Stadium, coming back to pitch?
Yeah, it was surreal for me because, you know, I fell in love with New York as a Met. I loved being a Met. And then that Subway Series, I had kind of fallen on my face that year. I was not nearly the same pitcher that I was in previous years. I was dealing with injuries. I was in the bullpen in that series. I didn't know if I'd even get a chance to pitch. There were questions as to whether I should even be on the roster for the Yankees because my performance was really that bad that year. So to be able to get that one at-bat against Mike Piazza, and that's what Joe Torre had in mind. He wasn't going to let Denny Nagel face Mike Piazza three times. He was kind of ahead of the curve as far as that goes. That third time through the lineup that we hear so much about nowadays, actually Joe Torre was that guy. And I didn't expect it. There was nobody out. There was two outs and nobody on base when he took Denny Nagel out in the fifth inning, one out away from the qualifying for a win. So that was really progressive managing at that point in time by Joe Torre that you see nowadays all the time. But yeah, to get that would mean everything to me. Piazza just missed it too. I think, you know, he's such a great hitter. I think he just missed. He popped that ball up to second base. But that was my last pitch as a Yankee. Our last at-bat was against Mike Piazza in the World Series.
Hey, what was it one game, too? You threw 160-plus pitches. I forget what, you know, summer it was. I mean, that'll never happen today.
No, that was against the Giants at Shea Stadium and right before the trade deadline. I think it was in June or July that year. John Franco was on the DL at the time, and we really didn't have a closer, so I kept – Jeff Torborg was the manager and Barry Foote the bench coach, and they kept – every inning, I'm fine. Okay, you got 130-something. Okay, I'm good. Hey, you got 140-something. I'm okay. Let me go back out there in the ninth inning. By the time I got the third out, I think I had 166 pitches that night and a 1-0 shutout against the Giants. So a lot of pitches, a lot of 3-2 counts, a lot of everything, a lot of strikeouts, a few walks. I mean, I filled up the stat sheet that year, that game. But, yeah, I'm proud of that game. I really am. 166 pitches, but you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you know, maybe that wasn't such a good idea.
Debbie, great career. I mean, 194 wins, 5 World Series, you know, Cy Young, All Star games. I mean, do you ever think about the whole? I mean, you know, the whole of. I mean, right, not there. I mean, you know, because you're a friend, you should be. I mean, you ever think about the Hall of Fame?
You know, more so in recent memory, as you can get more information. And this is another thing that has drawn me to, whether it's sabermetrics or analytics or whatever you want to call it, sort of peeling back the layers and looking under the hood at what your numbers really tell you about your career. And career war is one thing, wins above replacement. I think when you get around 60 or in that range of accumulative war, that puts you in the conversation. Some of the years I had, I thought, man, that was a better year than I thought, because a one loss record didn't tell the whole story. And that's what sabermetrics can do for you. That's what analytics can do for you. They can tell you, they can peel back the noise, so to speak, and get to the heart of how you really performed. And I'm happy to have the career I had. I'm happy to be in that argument. I don't know, but it's hard for me to advocate for myself in that regard. I know who the best pitchers of my generation were. I know it was...
You were right there with Lord.
Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Glavin and Maddox, Smoltz. I know who they were. I kind of feel like I'm on the edge of that, but, only so many can get in.
You know, another guy was your teammate, Keith, 11 gold gloves. He was the first baseman of everybody. And another guy, for me, should be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And that's another area where, even though Keith is not an analytics darling, right? He's more of an old school guy, but analytics really and sabermetrics paint him in a much more favorable way than I think he realizes, because in fact, it puts so much emphasis on defense. That's one thing I like about, some of the new metrics is they really, they give you the complete picture of the ball players. Not just about gold gloves. It's your defensive metrics are much more extensive. And Keith's, when you look at it and him, when you look at him under the hood, he's a much better player than he actually even got credit for.
Hey, David, I want to thank you for your time. You're a good friend. Listen, do you peek at the Mets scores when you're not Yankee game?
Absolutely. Team? Absolutely. I'll always, deep down wish nothing but goodwill for the Mets. I think they're in a great spot. I know Buck Showalter. I played for him. I know the organization. I've met the new owners, Mr. and Mrs. Cohen. I think they're fantastic. I think the organization's in great spot. Billy Epler, a good friend of mine too, from the Yankee days. I really think that the Mets are in a good place right now, and moving forward, they're going to be tough to contend with.
Who knows? Maybe we'll have another Subway Series.
Absolutely. It could easily happen.
Again, David, thank you for your time. You're a good friend. I appreciate always being there for me.
My pleasure. Anything for you, Jay. You're the best.
Thank you, Cody. Thank you, man.